I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, building a sales and marketing plan that's implementable and within budget. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic with Ron. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style assessments to raise the hiring bar, and we assist sales and operations to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so they have smooth sailing. Great thematic, Ron. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations, and if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients both domestically and globally to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, because we'll be sharing many ideas that you can consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. On the screen on the lower right-hand corner, you'll see a print icon. You can print the slides out for today also and take notes. Our special guest with us today is Ron Means, who works as a strategic partner and business coach with well over 20 companies in the Southern California area and across the country. Ron's experience ranges from the president of JBL, the pro speaker and electronics company, to a successful sale of an entrepreneurial startup developing digital encryption technology for the healthcare industry. Ron has extensive experience in growing businesses and maximizing enterprise value of the companies that he works with. Ron is also an awesome sailor and a horseback rider. And he has a cool YouTube video, which I'm sure maybe he'll share with you later on. You can view Ron live. I feel privileged to have Ron with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be 12 differentiating strategies for creating more value for your customers. Ron, I want to welcome you, and we're all very excited, and I'm grateful to have you on our program.
Well, thanks a lot, Dana. Good to be here, and you're not a bad sailor yourself.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a lot to cover. The topic of building a sales and marketing plan that's implementable and within budget is there's a lot of ground there. So why don't we get started right away without wasting any time. Okay, I clicked on the next slide. I'm waiting for it to move here. Let me double that again.
Let's go back because it was already. There we go. I'm going to take it back for a moment. There we go. Realize your potential in 3D.
Hey, Dana, my screen didn't change. Did yours?
Yep, we're good.
Okay.
We're good.
All right, so realizing your potential in 3D. What I mean by that is that there's a way to organize your current business information in a much more effective way to see not only where you should be selling product or what product you should be selling, but who you should be selling it to. And when you visualize your business in 3D, I kind of make an analogy. It's almost like looking at a Rubik's Cube. If you remember that old Rubik's Cube deal where you try to get all the colors in line and so forth, well, each of those little cubes all the way inside of that Rubik's Cube are business opportunities. There are opportunities by vertical market or types of customers. There's opportunities by geographic areas, and there are opportunities by product groups and types of product or goods and services that you sell. So what the plan is, and the way that we look at our business today in a more effective way and allowing us to spend our money and spend our time and effort in the right areas that are going to provide the most bang for the buck is by visualizing and actually plotting and charting out our business in 3D. So we're going to learn how to prioritize sales and marketing resources and what I call get into the zone of doing business on purpose.
Brian, do you want me to advance the slides?
Yeah, can you?
Okay. Yep.
Thanks.
Here we go.
So really a better way to organize the business. I learned this. I've heard, you know, we all learn through mistakes we've made and things that were successful, and I love to talk about real live examples because I think it lets you picture what I'm talking about in a better way. Give you a little background. I call this walking into the trap. I'm a young kid. I think I'm 23 or 24. I'm working for a public company. After I'd sold my business, I started in college and working in 9 states in the Midwest, traveling all over the place. I recall I was in Denver meeting with a division of Comcast Communications back then, and had my suit and tie on. I'm all dressed up for business. I'm on the way to the Denver airport, and I see this rock and roll music store on the way there, and the company I was working for at the time, Alltech Lansing, way back then. Some of you may
know. Oh, yeah.
They made products for music stores, so I pulled over and had an extra hour before I needed to be at the airport, so I walked into this dimly lit store and noticed that there was some people at the back side of the store, a little blue haze in the air. This was in the, in the 80s, and all of a sudden, there was a commotion and a back door opened up and the owner just came running toward me like a mad bull charging. Just chewed me out one side and the other. From walking into that store in a suit and tie, he said he was doing a deal in the back of the store. The guys were smoking something they shouldn't have. I walk in a suit and tie and scared off his customers. Lesson learned. That's called walking into the trap. What the heck did I learn out of that? I learned that I can't be the same person, I can't be the same company to these different kinds of vertical markets or business segments. Different kinds of customers expect different things from a company. You need to walk the walk and talk the talk. There's a different language when I'm talking to a rock and roll music store than there is when I'm talking to a commercial communications contractor. And I can't be the same person. I can't be the same company. So I remember that lesson and made me feel a little overwhelmed. That, geez, I got all these different verticals. As I really dug in and began to look at them, and here's this young guy figuring out I had 8 different verticals to deal with. Nobody had ever talked about that. You know, it was really territory sales management 101. So, let me see if I can click the next one here.
Let me put it forward?
There we go. It's working.
Okay, got it.
So traditional thinking. Had a sales manager that I worked for. We had geographic territories carved out, and we were out there to push the product into these geographic territories. So we had a list of stuff we were supposed to sell in these geographic territories, kind of the old style of business, push the product out and sell by geographic territories. And most classic sales managers are trained that way, and most marketing, much marketing is done that way as well. You know, where should I advertise, and let's advertise the stuff that we really want to push. Let's move it out. That was kind of the traditional old-style thinking, still done by a lot of companies. A lot of the companies that I work with and meet initially are still in that mode. So what that does, it gives you a flat look at your business. Let me give an example of a success story. So I get recruited into JBL, and wouldn't you know it, I fall back into the same old way of doing business that everybody else does. We looked at the cinema market, the movie theater market back when they were beginning to really expand. And you were beginning to see multiplexes. I think there were 7,000 movie screens in the U.S., and it was going to go to 26,000, best predictions. And so, of course, I'm president of that company. I look at that, and I say, boy, there's an opportunity. I talk to my my sales manager, and I said, get out there and kick these guys in the rear end and scent them, and let's get some movie theater sales going, because we did zero in that vertical. Well, the guys came back with their tails between their legs a couple months later and said, geez, we can't seem to make any progress here. And I said, what's the matter? He said, well, your old company had 100% of that business, and they're kind of the standard in the industry. And we can't seem to make a dent in that. And so I got that same feeling I had when I walked into the music store many, many years ago. And I thought to myself, wow, you're not listening to yourself. So we went back and we looked at building a three-dimensional model. It's really what it took. So we had to look at geographic, where do we sell, and you can build information on that. And I'll talk about it, and I'll give you guys some resources for being able to build these things and actually putting numbers to them, which is sort of the key to success. It's really the key to making this happen, because you're going to want to mine for opportunities. And that's what I began to do in this case. We said, okay, until we decide to put all of our energy into this one new vertical market here, let's see if it really makes sense. And so we plotted our business by geography. We plotted it by goods and services, what we had to sell, what our business plan said. If I wanted to do $130 million that year, and we had different margins on different product lines, we built our business model around that. We had to sell roughly that amount of business or more in the kinds of products that we forecasted we were going to sell, so that our mixed margin analysis would work and our bottom line would come true. The third one we began to plot then was vertical markets, customer types, business segments. Began to plot all of my customers by what they did, who they were, regardless of where they were. So I could now look at my business in 3D. I could see who I sold to, what kinds of businesses I was actually in, and what I sold to them, and where they were. So I could look at any one of those sides of the Rubik's Cube and begin to drill down.
So, Ron, somebody has asked a question. If you could repeat that again. And also, I want to encourage folks to ask questions through our chat program there. So the question is whether it's a service company or a manufacturing operation with a specific hard product.
Yep.
The process is still...
Yeah, doesn't matter. I've done this for service companies as well. It's goods or services. So picture an XYZ axis. Usually companies plot their business XY. The vertical axis is X, and they put their goods or services. So you might have different consulting services that you do or provide to companies. You might provide strategic planning. You might provide business coaching. You might provide...
travel service.
Yeah, and so forth. So all of those are different types of services that you provide. Along the x-axis, you might decide, well, I'm only doing business in Southern California here, so I'm going to plot my business by major zip code area, okay, or by county, or by major city area. So you can then plot where is my business and what are my goods or services that I offer. The third axis, the one coming out of the page, is who are my customers. And so that's the one that really begins to enlighten you, because you begin to find out when you code all of your customers, you begin to find out who you're successful selling, and when you do the next version of this, which is the opportunity model, you can then compare the opportunities to actual, and that's when I begin to talk about mining the business for dollars, mining these databases to find out where the options are. For the example of the movie theater business I was just talking about, we plotted our business by verticals. We had 8 different verticals. We had there in the U.S., if you're marketing in the U.S. alone, there are about 300 major market areas. That data is available, i.e. the data that tells you what percentage of the U.S. should Cleveland major market be versus L.A. versus New York versus et cetera, et cetera? There's about 300 major ones. That database is available for free. Sales and Market Management Magazine publishes it, and it's called the Survey of Buying Power Index. You can get online. You can search for that. You can pull the numbers down. I did it the other day just to make sure it was there and updated, and it is available. You can copy and paste it right into a spreadsheet. So what I did to build this model is I just took the Survey of Buying Power Indices for the major markets in North America and applied those numbers and declared that the total of those numbers was 100%, did a divide by, and came up with the percentage of business I should be doing in the New York market versus L.A. versus Cleveland and so forth. So now you can actually look at what you're actually doing versus what your potential is by geography. Okay, so that's basic sales management. Just about every sales manager in the world does that kind of stuff. They may not get the percentages accurate because they're not using a good database, but find a database that works for your business, apply it, and look at the potential. You set the potential for the goods or services that you want to sell or offer. So you may decide that you make more money providing coaching services or providing movie theater sound systems or whatever you decide to do based on how you develop your business, and so you prioritize those. The third one is vertical markets or business segments. And those are the ones where we plotted and I got information on the 8 different vertical markets. That's a little harder. You got to dig into industry organizations and so forth to find out how to relatively come up with the sizes of those. And it doesn't, this isn't a scientific, you don't have to be scientifically accurate down to the decimal point, but what you're really interested in is in relatively speaking, is there more business available in one of these markets than the other, and roughly by what percentage? And so we plotted the business opportunities, the total business size by these 8 vertical markets. While the movie theater market wasn't one of the larger markets, we had 0 market share in it and felt that we could really grow that industry. When we ran the model, it showed that we could really have some significant growth in revenue. So then the question becomes, okay, if that's going to be our focus, how do we go after it? How do we get it? So that was that's an example of how to mine that database. And again, you start with your current database, your current customer business, assign customers to a geographic territory, and categorize each of them to a vertical. And then track that revenue by vertical and geographic markets. You'll begin to see trends. You'll begin to see, if you're national, for instance, or in a large area, you begin to see, hey, I'm doing more business in, let's say you're in a business, I think one of the guys here is in snack foods. Well, you might find that your verticals in that industry are gas stations, fast food stores, little snack shops, or specialty restaurants, or whatever. So you pick all those different kinds of locations that you sell to, and look at where you're selling that kind of your products, what kind of products you're selling into which verticals by geography. And sometimes you'll see trends. You'll see trends where in some geographic areas you're doing better with certain verticals than in other geographic areas you're doing better in other verticals. There's a lot of information in there to find out why. You ask the questions, why? Why am I doing well in a certain vertical in that geographic area and not so much in others? And often it's the salespeople. Often it's they feel more comfortable selling to those kinds of customers. That begins to point you toward training and toward learning why you're successful in certain areas and carrying that into other areas. So that's really build your database and discover who you sell to and where you sell.
Ron, we have a question that just came in.
Yeah.
For a typical financial advisor selling hire services to small businesses and industry, how does your segmentation work? Should they specialize in a few verticals, i.e., let's say doctor's offices, manufacturing versus selling to any and all businesses?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've worked with some financial advisory companies, and that's exactly what we found. We found that when we built the map by vertical market, that they were doing particularly well with certain customer segments. In fact, it was doctors, and in fact, it was certain types of doctors or medical facilities. And others of their competitors seem to be doing well with manufacturing companies or whatever. So I think we've all heard when we've walked into a business to sell them a goods or service that the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, well, you know, my business is different. And I agree with you. All businesses are different. And they're all the same. There's a lot of similarities between businesses. The difference, though, is that you learn to speak their language. And that's why I call this doing business on purpose. Decide who you want to sell to, who you're going to be effective in selling to, and what it takes to do that. You end up getting into industry organizations. Let me give an example of this theater industry, because it's no different than consulting. Just because I was selling hard goods to movie theaters, that's no different than selling consulting services to them. I had to get in the club. They wouldn't buy from us, from JBL, because we weren't in the club. My former company was the standard in the industry. So that kept resounding in our heads, and we said, well, then we better become the standard in the industry. It's a little easier to attack the structure and move it from the top of the pyramid than it is from the bottom. So we started working in the early days with Lucasfilm on THX. We helped them develop that whole THX thing. We worked with Dolby, Warner Brothers, and basically designed a better-sounding sound system, you know, cured a couple of sound problems in the industry. That was a minor part of it. But used that as a leverage to present to the Academy Theater. After a fairly short period of time, we had the major studios mixing all their movies on JBL, and we had the Academy Theater switching to a JBL sound system. The screen went down. They put the sound system in. We took the photos. We ran the ads in the trades, declared ourselves the standard in the industry, got on industry organizations, did some talks, went around, sent the sales guys back out. Within 3 years, we had 77% of the movie theater business nationally.
You were focused.
That takes focus. Look, you got to be in the club to get into these verticals. You really have to be part of them, and getting there means you're gonna talk their language. You're gonna understand where they come from. So, for instance, let's say you're a financial consultant, and you're working with CEOs and heads of manufacturing companies. Well, they have certain needs. They have certain terms they use and slang that they talk about. And when you can walk into there and talk about them, and mention that you really focus and you help manufacturing companies solve their financial needs, for instance, and you've got stories to tell about it that really ring true to them, and maybe you're in some of the industry organizations and you're attacking that vertical with a focused approach. You can also quantify, you know, how many of these guys are there out there? What's their average income? You know, so then you can quantify the size of that market segment versus, let's say, the medical industry or doctors versus retirees versus whatever. All those can be different vertical markets, and you need to quantify them. You need to quantify the potential and decide which ones you're going to go after on purpose.
Interesting. So by building the opportunity model, you can actually see how much time or money should be spent in order to capture that market?
Exactly. And that's how you begin to prioritize your marketing and sales, because in a little bit we're going to talk about why you want to do that and how to save money. Because when we try to market to every vertical market in all geographic areas with all of our products, it becomes less effectual. Okay, so I talked about being an insider. I talked about the movie theater industry and taking advantage of part-time competitors.
Oh, Ron, a question just came in also, which is based on your the previous slide. Could you repeat how and where to get this sort of information in order to do the research before putting the time and money into?
Yeah, there are geographic research is available. There's a company I mentioned, Sales and Market Management Magazine. Okay, so you can type that into a Google search, Sales and Market Management Magazine. And they do a survey every year, and it's called the Survey of Buying Power, or Buying Power Index. And what they do is they apply numbers across the country for sales tax and manufacturing revenue. They have a few different surveys available. That's one place to look. There are also government websites to get information specifically. And then the third one is trade industry organizations. If you're going to go after a vertical, there's a trade industry for that vertical, and they will have information on the growth rate, size of their industry, and so forth. So once you know roughly the ratio of geographic opportunity, i.e. how big, as a percentage, how big is L.A. versus New York versus Chicago versus Houston versus Austin, et cetera, like I said, there's about 300 major markets. Pick your markets, pick your geographic markets you're going to work in. Quantify the opportunity ratios, and then overlay on those the vertical market industry sizes. At that point, you've got a map. At that point, you know how much by vertical you should be doing by geographic area, and you already know what you want, what your goods and services are by your strategic business plan. How much business do I want to do with these goods or services that I sell or offer? And you've got your three-dimensional map. You've got the opportunity map, and you've got the as-built, I call it. You know, who am I currently selling to, and where am I selling, and what am I selling? Once you know those, and you can compare that to the opportunity, you've now got a map of where you need to go. Did that answer the question?
That's great. No, that's perfect. Thank you.
Great. So we talk about the 7,000 screens roughly going to 26,000. I talked about becoming an insider in an industry organization. And taking advantage of part-time competitors. Most companies don't do this. Most companies are running around with a geographic map, kicking salespeople and trying to do business by geographic territories only. When you walk into a competitor or you walk into a potential customer and your competitors are out there being generalists and you're looked at not as a generalist but as a specialist in their industry, you've got a huge edge.
How do you promote that?
You promote that through getting involved in industry organizations. You promote it through self-promotion. Like I said, nobody declared me as the standard in the industry or my company. In the theater industry, we did. We took pictures, had credible stories, and declared ourselves a standard in the industry.
Okay, so creating the standard. Now, some of this sounds like big company stuff, but Ron, I know you work with more mid-cap and smaller companies, and you have a great example here coming up. Is this all applicable to a small company?
It is. Let me put this slide in here to specifically answer that, because a lot of people say, "Geez, I can't do this. That was a big company." So I eat in this Thai restaurant out here a lot, and Mary, the owner, loves to sit down and commiserate. She knows I work with other businesses, so she'll bring me a dessert sometimes or an extra iced tea and sit down and chat with me. And so she's been commiserating lately and saying, "Geez, I can't seem to grow the business." And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And she says, "Well, I'm running ads in this local, small business paper that comes out, and I put a coupon in there for a free dessert with lunch." So what happens is, all these gals from the retirement community next door over here, they come over and they split a lunch, and then they each want a free dessert. And she says, I'm not making any money with this. I'm not even paying for the ad. And so I said, well, and I pulled a napkin open and I kind of drew a XYZ axis on it. And I said, well, let's just take a look at your business in a logical way. I said, who are your customers? And so we kind of listed that customers for her were the ones that she had were these retirement community people. They were then business people that had an hour off of lunch and were in the area. And then the dinner crowd was a little different. And what she really wanted when we listed all those were the sort of two people working with a couple of kids. And that was a pretty profitable business for her. So we now had the kind of verticals that she liked. Those are the people she sells to. Those are the verticals. We talked about, like I said, what's not working, attracting the wrong kind of customers. And then we looked at the geography around it and realized that she was pretty close to a geographic area where the vertical market, the customer in that vertical was not the customer that was going to make her any money. However, not too far away was a brand new community full of dual worker people in a very concentrated area of multifamily homes and single family homes, and easy to get to and market to in a different way. And those, as she looked at the map, were the people she would love to get. So what we did is we put a little business plan together and we said, look, instead of spending money to advertise to everybody, including the people you don't want to talk to, why don't we just advertise to those people with a little door hanger program or something where you can hire a high school kid, go out there and hang these little things in the doors and offer them free delivery. Because you got a factory here that makes Thai food. You can only seat so many people for a dinner seating, and then people walk away when you're too crowded and they won't come there. Your competitor is what? She said, my competitor's pizza. You know, the mom comes home late and working all day. She picks up a pizza on the way home, feeds the family, and feels guilty for the next week. So Thai food, fresh, healthy, blah, blah, blah. We came up with a little story. She had a story for how it's much better for the family, for the kids, and so forth. So now she had a way to market. She had a place to market, too, a geographic location. So her solution was more geographic customer solution than it was vertical market or product solution.
Interesting.
So she had door hangers, hire a high school kid, put them out there, have a free delivery set up. You can afford to do that if you've got a very concentrated group of people in a geographic area. So that was her fix. That's how to work something like this for something as small as a little three-person Thai restaurant.
I like the way you identified it as a manufacturing operation.
And that's what it is. Yeah, they manufacture Thai food. They can only seat so many people, but they got a factory in there. That kitchen can make a lot more than what they can seat.
Huh.
So really had to take a look at it that way. The third thing to really look at and think about is are your goods or services. She had in the Thai restaurant a product that she thought she couldn't compete with pizza, but it's a fresh, healthy alternative to pizza, and it's a make mom feel good, make her not feel guilty. Buyer's remorse and feeling guilty is a huge, huge force in purchasing. And if you can use that and leverage it to your advantage, you can take people through the thought process of failure, of making a bad buying decision, and then make them feel good about had they picked you or when they pick you, how good they'll feel about it. That's a powerful, powerful selling tool. The other one is as I like to talk about, is the product or the goods and services. You know, most of us get into the mode, and I was very much in that mode myself, of selling stuff. When most of the customers don't really want your stuff, they want what your stuff does. They want a solution. And so I go back to the camera industry, and I've given this talk to major industry organizations over the years about what are we doing to make ourselves more effective in our goods and services and what we offer. If you think about the camera industry and where they came from, way back when many of you probably don't remember, you had to go to a camera store to buy a camera because it was all manual. You had to operate everything, all these controls, very confusing. You had to understand how to set a camera. One day some new technology came out. Pentax, I think, was the first company to make an SLR, a single lens reflex camera. They put a meter in the thing, and they made it so that when you adjusted the dials, the meter would go in the middle. You get a pretty darn good picture. You had to focus it, and boy, that was a revolution. That was a major breakthrough. They started selling the heck out of those, and everybody went to that kind of a camera. And then pretty soon, some companies decided they could put a little more electronics, a little more smarts inside of those cameras, and they could actually make that thing set itself so that you didn't have to move the dials if you didn't want to. There was an auto setting. And then they figured out that they could actually put a little motor in there and focus the darn thing for you. Then they figured out that they could put a real computer chip in there and make it do all of the above and make it do all kinds of different scenarios for lighting and get really intelligent about it. And then they figured out they could actually shrink that down and make it tiny so it fit in your shirt pocket. Then they realized that the customer never wanted a camera in the first place. They just wanted an image.
Huh.
If you could have taken your family to Yosemite, stood in front of the waterfalls, got a picture at home, you wouldn't have bought a camera because all you wanted was the image. You didn't want the camera. There was a very tiny market for camera owners, for people that really wanted to play with the hardware and twiddle with it and do esoteric photography. 99.99% of everybody just wanted the image. And so what happened is that changed the whole distribution pattern in that industry. You used to go and get the knowledge from the salesperson. Now the knowledge was built in the chip. When that happened, you didn't need the salesperson anymore. Mail order, other forms of distribution took over, mass merchants and so forth. So it changed the whole demographics of who those people needed to sell to in the B2B sale.
So that what you're just sharing here is really, really important. So if any of us, whether it's manufacturing or service, think that we're selling a camera and people want a camera, we could have a completely misalignment with the market because they may not want it, but what they want is something completely different.
Exactly. That's why I say live in your customer's vertical. Get into industry trade organizations. Understand the business they're in. Talk the language. Speak the language, and only then can you really understand what is I'm really offering to these people. You know, I sold rock and roll PA gear to music stores like Guitar Center chains and Sam Ash's and Manny's Music's in New York and all over the world. Well, again, if those musicians could have walked on stage and been heard, I'd have been out of business. So they wanted something that would be as close to that as possible. And so we developed products based on that theory and did a huge amount of business when we changed our thinking.
So when someone's doing any kind of customer service survey or marketing research, the important factor is more around listening to what the group or market share segment really wants versus what we think they need.
Exactly. And when you're in B2B sales, what you have to do is get into the head of your ultimate customer. That's who you're talking to. That's who you're providing a service for. And I submit that just about everything we sell, whether it's hard goods or not, ends up being a service. I buy a camera not because I want the object. I buy a camera because I want to have an image. I want that service.
Good clarity, Ron. Thank you. Thanks
uh-huh.
for me.
So let's sum it up a little bit. We talked about building a database. We talked about actually building two databases. The first database is the I call it the as-built. We need to look at our businesses the way they exist today, and we can mine that database and learn something about what we're doing. You're going to see trends. You're going to see trends. I sell to certain kinds of customers in some geographic areas, and I sell to other kinds of customers in other geographic areas. The good question to ask is, why is that? There may be demographic variance by vertical market. For instance, in the JBL, we had one of the verticals was recording industry. Well, you can well imagine that there are more recording studios in New York, Chicago, Nashville, LA, than there are in Des Moines, Iowa. So we built a model to reflect that. And so you need to have that kind of level of intelligence to be able to build these models. But then when you've done that, you know when you're off track. So you need to build the as-built. You'll find that certain of your salespeople are really good with certain verticals. They're comfortable with certain kinds of customers. They're better at it. And others are not. Give you an example. I had 18 sales rep territories in North America. I had an average of seven or eight salesmen per territory. I would fly out when anybody did just a stellar job that month and hand deliver the paychecks and take a bottle of wine. We'd have a big dinner and a nice celebration. I recall one of the meetings was in Cleveland. We sat down the next morning. Everybody was a little hungover from the night before. They're ready to be patted on the back, and they're ready to tell me how great they are. And I then started the meeting by telling them how they left $150,000 on the table that month. The jaws, you could hear them hitting the table. And so as we dug into it, I said, "You did a great job. Don't want to take any of that away from you. However, in the Toledo market, and it was a couple of other geographic markets, they were off. They had gone way over in some of the other geographic areas. By vertical market, they were way down in music stores, and it happened to be in those areas, those geographic areas, and they were way off on certain product categories that related to those industries. And so I said, who do you have selling into that geographic area? And I looked at the guy that they pointed to, and he had five or six pens in his pocket. He was clearly very good at selling to B2B communications contractors, engineering firms, that kind of thing. He couldn't have sold his way out of a music store if he tried. So they were running their territory by geography when they should have been running it by vertical market. We got them to switch it over. The business went up, more than paid for the extra gas they had to spend to run around. So they had guys that were very, very good at selling into certain verticals and not good at others. You need to fix that by either training or by allowing yourselves to be less efficient from a geographic standpoint and overlapping territories so that you begin to make territories by vertical rather than by geographic areas. Do some G2 on your demographics. Make sure you know what your verticals are and what the relative sizes are. Like I said, get involved in different business segments and industry organizations. They all have data. You can get the data. It doesn't have to be 100% accurate. Start with something. Start with rough estimates. I started this in some vertical markets with what we call field G2. Which was kind of a wag. Okay, we knew roughly an industry size, and then we spread it by, at first glance, we spread it by the same percentages that we got from Sales and Market Magazine. As we learned more about the industries and got more involved in them, we refined those numbers a little bit. And then mine the database. Prioritize the who's, the who, the what, and the where. Make sure you know who you're selling to, how to sell to those people, we all know what we're selling, but make sure you understand that what you're selling isn't necessarily the hard goods product that you're selling or the service that you think you're selling. It may be, and what's more important is it's what the customer thinks you're selling. What is it that they really want from you? So you may be selling them a camera, and they may be buying an image. And then mine the database again. Prioritize the who, the what, and the where. Most of us are pretty good with the where, the geographic. Most of us are pretty good with the what, if we go deep enough. It's the who. Remember, you don't want to be part-time in a business when your competitors are full-time in that business. And I'll leave you with one thought here, and that is, how would you like your competitors to do this to you?
Whoa, that's a good question. That's a very good question.
Yep, a great exercise. How would you put yourself out of business?
That's a good one. Okay.
This is one way that I might consider putting myself out of business is having somebody do this to me.
Yeah. Wow. In just a minute or so, we're going to conclude this portion of our program. We're going to open up the line. And we've been asked by people who have attended the past to make sure we don't have the recording on because a lot of people want to ask questions, but they don't want their voice put out there. So, and you'll have an opportunity to talk to Ron. So let me just close this segment down, and then we're going to open the line up. I'm going to ask everybody also to put your phones on mute because if someone's in the car or something, there'll be some background noise. And then if you have a question, you can unmute your phone. You'll see on your screen an area to let's go to the last slide here, Ron.
Okay.
And if you can take us there. You'll see on the screen an area to register for our upcoming September 29th Open Line program, which is entitled 12 Differentiating Strategies for Creating More Value for Customers. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and a PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Ron and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Ron to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, databases, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together or to discuss any ideas shared today, you'll see Ron's contact information on your screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Now hold the line. We're going to open it up. I want you all to have a great day. Let me turn off the recording equipment, and then we're going to have Ron live for you all. So hold the line for 1 second here.